Hello and welcome to this podcast from the private wealth team at Saffrey Champness. My name's Leonora Stevens and I'm a partner in the private wealth team based in Bristol. I'm joined virtually today by Mike Hodges, who's the head of private wealth at Saffrey's based in our Manchester office. We're also very lucky to be joined for the second time by Alex Britton-Davis, a tax partner in our London office who's a specialist in advising on UK residency and domicile matters. In our last podcast with Alex, we focused on how to lose your UK tax residency and what are the traps that people need to look out for and consider when planning a move overseas. In today's podcast, we'll focus on matters from a different perspective. We'll look at the tax matters that you should consider if you're thinking of returning to the UK. In particular, any planning you should think about before you book that ticket. As mentioned in previous podcasts, as a firm, residency is a big area of interest from clients, both incoming and outgoing of the UK. When returning to the UK or simply moving here for the first time, determining your UK residency start date can have a big implication on both your UK or overseas tax bills. Indeed, for those who are not UK domiciled, pre-arrival planning is key to ensure that matters can be kept as simple as possible to maintain going forward whilst benefiting from the non-dom regime. In today's podcast, we'll cover off the implications of determining your date of return to the UK, what happens when there's a crossover, for example, if you have a period of dual residency, temporary non-residence rules to watch out for, returning non-doms and some pre-arrival planning. So Alex, first things first, why is it important to ascertain the return date to the UK and what are the various implications?
Yes, so as we discussed on our last podcast, the way residency is determined for the UK is you look at the tax year as a whole. So from the 6th of April to the 5th of April the following year. So even though you might arrive in the UK in, say, September, it's possible that your start date for residency will be the 6th of April earlier that year. So, you know, you might need to start thinking about this months before you actually return to the UK. We do have split year treatment that might mean that, you know, your start date is a bit later. But those rules are a bit complicated. People don't always meet the criteria. And there are certain taxes that that split year treatment doesn't apply to. So it's always good to, you know, start looking at this before the beginning of the tax year in which you plan to move back to the UK.
Do you find people do that, Alex, or are they last minute? What's your typical experience? And we should say we're recording this on the 1st of February. We're all a bit shell-shocked by the end of the 31st of January filing deadline, where some clients, not all, but some clients have been quite last minute in their information, which makes the question, puts it towards the front of my mind.
It really varies. Obviously, some people, if they're moving because of work or because their children are going to be in school in the UK, might not actually be making those plans until after the beginning of a tax year. So in that case, you know, you can't plan in advance. Other people, you know, are making those plans further in advance and will start talking to us a year before. It does depend on exactly what the circumstances are. But I would always say, you know, if you think something's a possibility, it's worth starting to talk to us before anything becomes sort of definite, because, you know, that sometimes it can be a bit late to make those changes that you need to.
So early in the day before your flight lands at Heathrow or Manchester or wherever you're coming back into the country.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do sometimes have our first meetings with people once they're already here, and there's still a lot we can do in those circumstances. But yeah, the sooner we can talk to you, the better.
I suppose, do you get many people who do fall into the dual residency sort of category? So I had a client who was moving back to the UK from Canada, and he was under UK legislation. We deemed him to be UK resident, but under the Canadian rules, he was actually resident there as well. So it fell on based upon all his specific circumstances, he was only resident in Canada, even though he met our tests.
Yeah, absolutely. So we, the residency rules in other countries are very different to ours. Some of them are very much based on their tax years, often the calendar year, whereas others, you know, are based on other factors like where you have a home, where your family are. So we certainly see a lot of people becoming dual resident, and, you know, that's not necessarily a problem. With most jurisdictions, we have double tax agreements where that will essentially tell you who will get to tax each source of income, so you shouldn't pay tax twice. We do also see clients where they're not dual resident, but they're even not resident anywhere for a period. So, for example, they might cease to be resident in another country at the end of December and not become resident in the UK until the 6th of April. Also, there might be clients who move to the UK in, say, February, don't trigger UK residents, but the jurisdiction they've left will carry on treating them as a resident until they become resident elsewhere. So you can end up with some slightly odd scenarios where you're not actually tax resident in the place you're living. So again, that's one reason why you really want to, you know, get the advice in the country you're leaving and the UK before doing anything, because you might be a bit surprised by the result otherwise.
So every possible combination of facts and tax residents, non-residents is possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it will always depend on the other jurisdiction, because as I say, everywhere has very different rules.
They do.
A hugely complex area, which we love to get stuck into.
We do.
Alex, we briefly discussed in our last podcast about what people should watch out for if they're returning to the UK, having been away for a few years. Do you want to expand on that?
Yes. Yeah, so there's some rules called the temporary non-residence rules. And these are sort of anti-avoidance rules that were introduced to stop people leaving for short periods, realising lots of income or capital gains, and then moving straight back to the UK. Generally speaking, you know, the people those are targeted at are, you know, people who are just doing the move for particular reasons. But they can catch people who, say, move abroad to take up employment in another country, but they're only away for, say, 3 years. There might be certain types of income and capital gains, which on return will be taxable in the UK. And it's good to know that before you come back, so you've got the information to report. Again, we can potentially look at double tax treaties to sort of alleviate any double taxation that may arise. But yeah, those rules broadly apply to anyone who's gone for 5 years or less. So, you know, if you want to be certain you're not going to be caught, you need to be out for 6 full tax years.
Noted. And then one other sort of rule that was changed slightly over the last few years is about returning non-DOMs, which I think all stemmed from the case about Stuart Gulliver and HSBC. Do you want to expand a bit on the sort of returning non-DOM rules?
Yes. So in terms of domicile, an individual who's UK domiciled can lose that domicile if they move somewhere else and form an intention to remain there permanently or indefinitely. Essentially, they create a new permanent home there. If previously that individual may have returned to the UK temporarily, you know, they weren't planning to be here for many years, they still considered that new jurisdiction, Hong Kong in this case, to be their permanent home. That's where they wanted to reside and end up eventually. But the government and HMRC weren't too keen on those people who were previously UK domiciled coming back to the UK and saying, nope, I might be back in the UK, but I'm still non-domiciled. So they introduced a rule where if you're UK domiciled at birth and you were born in the UK, any time that you're UK resident, you will be treated as though you're UK domiciled for all tax purposes. There is sort of a 1 year sort of threshold for inheritance tax. So, you know, if you return for 1 year and, you know, you're hit by a bus or something, it's not the end of the world. But those rules really are to sort of say, look, if you're UK domiciled by birth and you're going to come back, we'll treat you as UK domiciled. We won't enter into a debate about, oh, have you really formed the intention to, you know, reside overseas for good? You know, there's just a straightforward rule.
I guess we ought to say, Alex, that the whole concept of domicile is itself massively technical and involved. It's really where your, I always say to clients, it's where your heart is, because I think there were some old cases where even if you'd been out of the country for decades, if your dying wish was to be buried in the village you'd been born in the UK, there was a risk that you would be deemed to be UK, or you would be UK domiciled.
Yeah, absolutely. The rules are complicated, and obviously each individual circumstances are so different in terms of, you know, where they consider they belong, where they plan yes. to return eventually. So it really is important to take specific advice. You know, as people are becoming more internationally mobile, it's becoming a little bit more complicated. We don't have necessarily have straightforward cases of, yep, mum and dad born in this country, lived in that country all their life, and I was born and lived there too. You know, people do have more complicated circumstances. Yeah. So it's important to work through those. And I would always say best to have those conversations with your parents earlier rather than later, because a lot of the relevant information will be with your parents and possibly grandparents rather than just information you can provide yourself.
It's always a slightly awkward conversation when you have a new client and you have to say to them, when you talk about domicile of origin and, you know, the father's domicile, then you have to ask the question, so were your parents married at the time of my birth? Because obviously if they're not married, then you take the domicile of your mother. So that's always a slightly awkward question, but one worth asking anyway.
I'm sure you breeze through, Leo, in a very casual but professional way.
Well, I try. but Alex, finally, so any top tips on pre-arrival planning, and what would you say the key areas people should focus on, bearing in mind that advice would differ depending on whether they're UK or non-dom? And sort of, have you got any examples where people didn't plan and what went wrong?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously the top tip is work out when you become UK resident and when you cease to be resident in the jurisdiction you're moving from. You know, do you have a crossover? Do you have a gap with where you're not resident anywhere? A gap of residence can be quite useful if you need to sort of restructure things. You know, maybe the investments you hold are very efficient in the US, but, you know, won't be very efficient when you return to the UK. I think understanding what sources of income and capital gains you will have and how they're taxed in the UK is really important. For example, something that's tax-free or tax advantageous in another country, we might not tax in the same way. Things like cryptocurrencies are adding additional confusion to that, and HMRC's view on those. So it's really good to review each asset to make sure you know how you're going to be taxed when you are back here. And if possible, based on where you're leaving, you might want to, if you're planning on selling some assets or investments, you know, sell those before coming back so that you're not paying UK tax on those. But obviously, that's going to depend on what tax you're paying in another jurisdiction. But yeah, I think it's really important to look at your portfolios, look at your assets, sources of income, and know how you're going to be taxed so you can look at possibly changing things up if there's something that's going to be problematic.
Yeah, I suppose the most sort of common type of pre-arrival planning I've had is of people sort of returning from Dubai, for example, who've been working over there for several years, and then we look at the assets, crystallize any any gains before they come back, but hold on to those that are at a loss so that they can maintain those on their return. I think also a sort of a common misconception is that if they, for example, Dubai, and they've earned all their money in Dubai and paid zero or minimal tax over there, that they can bring that to the UK tax free, because that relates to a period when they were overseas and, you know, and they weren't UK resident at the time. So I think that there are lots of complications, but also something I had another client who was actually coming to the UK for the first time and looking to buy a house before he came here, and was looking to secure funding to secure against an offshore portfolio, which is in itself another area of complexity, which I think he then decided not to do in the end. But again, people need to be aware of those traps, that if they do that before they become UK resident, what the implications of doing something like that is, which is why it's always useful to get in touch with Safri Chapness.
Yeah, absolutely. Those individuals who are non-domiciled and would be planning to make claims for the remittance basis, obviously that adds an additional layer of complexity, particularly if they were previously resident here and therefore might have income and capital gains which they claim the remittance basis on years ago. They need to be careful about remitting those, as well as income and gains that might be taxable under the temporary non-residence rules and income and gains arising when they return to the UK as well. So there's a lot of potential areas to be caught out there. So it is important to take good advice.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, before I wrap up, I just thought, Mike, I'm going to put you on the spot. As we were talking about last minute clients yesterday, getting their tax returns in, what date did you submit your tax return in the end?
I submitted mine a week earlier than normal. So I was not the weekend just gone, but the weekend before that. You were relying on me saying it was Sunday evening at 9 p.m. or something, weren't you? Or yesterday evening at 11 p.m. No, I was early for me.
I was Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Only because I love doing it. And we need to get our, you know, enjoyment from somewhere.
I think I might win then. I was the 10th of January.
So. Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say Christmas Day, Alex, that you were one of those, however many, 3,000 or 4,000 the revenue announced each year, who did theirs on Christmas Day.
Well, thank you very much, Alex and Mike, for joining me today. We work with a wide range of clients. Many are UK-based and many live overseas but have interests here, whether that's property, business interests or investments. We advise individuals and families on how best to safeguard, maintain and enhance their wealth and on the most appropriate methods of passing on that wealth to the next generation. We also help people comply with the tax laws in the UK, which can be complex. If you'd like to find out more about Saffrey Chapness and how we can help you, please head over to the Saffrey Chapness website at www.saffrey.com. However, it is important for me to stress that if you're considering any of the topics discussed today, you must always take professional advice based on your individual circumstances. Thank you for listening.